President Trump and Elon Musk are forcing radical changes in Washington, from stopping payments for health care and threatening to restrict abortion rights to accessing Americans' private information. With Washington out of control, who we elect to the Wisconsin Supreme Court could be the last line of defense of our rights. The ACLU Voter Education Fund does not endorse or oppose candidates, but wants you to cast an informed vote in the Wisconsin Supreme Court election. So where do the candidates land on issues like abortion? Brad Schimmel stated he supports banning abortion. Susan Crawford successfully protected abortion rights while representing Planned Parenthood in Wisconsin. We need a Wisconsin Supreme Court that can be a check and balance to protect us when our rights are threatened at the federal level. On April 1st, Wisconsin voters will make a critical decision about the future of abortion in our state. To learn more about the Wisconsin Supreme Court candidates, visit aclu.org/WI2025. Paid for by ACLU Voter Education Fund, 212-549-2500. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's agent or committee.
ACLU Voter Education Fund is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Talk to me, so you can see, what's going on.
Welcome back to What's Going On with Earl Ingram. I want to thank, as always, our great sponsor, Wisconsin Civil America, American Civil Liberties Union, and the support that they offer us. It's encouraging and it keeps us moving forward. So again, thank you to that great organization that is doing great civic duty to remind us all of just how important our freedoms are. It is that day and that time again that I welcome back none other than Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action. He's with public policy and community organizer. He's been on Fox News, MSNBC, Al Jazeera, many other news outlets. He's an accomplished author and so many other things that I could say about my good friend, Dr. Robert Craig, a graduate. And got a BA at University of Pittsburgh, a PhD, Wisconsin University. And, you know, Dr. Craig, all of those different accolades. But I'll tell you, you know, you and I've never said this or I haven't said this. I don't think people remember, but I am a member of Citizen Action. And I have been for a number of years and I will continue to be. Because I believe in what you guys do. And when I was talking about all the accolades, I forgot to mention Executive Director of Citizen Action. And before we get into all of these things we're going to be talking about, give us some background on what Citizen Action is, Dr. Craig.
So we're 42 years old, Citizen Action of Wisconsin. So we're a statewide membership organization that where people join, work together to actually make positive change, to, in a nutshell, shift power from the very powerful to average people on big issues like guaranteeing healthcare as a fundamental right, not as a privilege, cost of energy, the climate crisis, for example, wages. We're working on a $20 minimum wage. And so the only way a system changes is a lot of people at the local level, we have organizing co-ops throughout the state, get together and push on these issues and push their legislators, push governors, work in elections. We both do public policy and grassroots lobbying, but we also do elections. And so right now we're trying to assure that whoever comes through this gubernatorial primary is going to run on a old progressive platform that actually people can feel in their lives, actually improve the affordability of things, which is, of course, cost and wages together. And in addition, to push for a legislature that will actually act on the state's biggest problems, which we have not had in a very long time in Wisconsin. So I think, Earl, the solution to all the problems with democracy are more and better democracy. That is what we think.
You know, Dr. Craig, as civil liberties, I thought were to protect individuals from government in simplest terms. What are civil liberties, and why are we facing, or have we always faced these issues? You spoke a little earlier to me about whether or not, you know, that term has been interchangeable and it's different for different people. I'm gullible, Dr. Craig. I remember as a young man,
I'm working in at a place called A.O. Smith, and I am about 20 years old, 19 years old, and I'm thinking I have freedom of speech, right? Oh, I've got freedom of speech. So I'm trying to utilize my freedom of speech at, you know, on the shop floor. And someone told me, hey, you're going to wind up getting fired. I'm like, man, I have freedom of speech. Dr. Craig, can you explain to us, the American citizens, just where all of this lies and where freedom of speech ends and what that all these things really are?
Well, the root of this country is the philosophy that developed about freedom and about liberty, which people have fundamental rights. Like, we hold these truths to be self-evident, right? As in the Declaration of Independence. And how that works out in practice is always very complicated, and it's been very complicated in American history. But there is an idea that you do as an individual, as a person, as a human being, have certain rights, right, to privacy, to speech, a whole lot of other things, right? And it's evolved over the years as society's evolved. But of course, it's always come with a balance, because one person's rights can infringe upon another person's rights. Like, the right of big tech to build data centers might infringe upon all of the rest of our rights. You know what I mean? The right of hospitals to charge whatever they want and not tell you what the price is going to be. And so there always has to be this balance, Earl, between individual, you know, where your rights go to the extent where they infringe upon someone else's rights. And we often lose sight of that. In fact, as we've had income inequality grow again to 19th century levels, now the rights of oligarchs, of the rich, of powerful corporations, are much more regarded and defended than the rights of average people. And that's where things are out of balance and where democracy needs to restore those rights. You could go into a lot of different ways. I mean, the fact that ICE can go and just violate everyone's rights. By the way, the Constitution does apply to people who are poor, not citizens. So the idea that if you're here without documentation, you have no rights and they can do whatever they want to you, not true, actually. The Constitution does not say that, but we're certainly denying due process, doing targeting people, we as in the Trump regime. You currently have the Trump regime shutting down coverage of the war, right? They just, they lost a court case where they tried to make all of the journalists sign the statement that they'd only report what they received from the regime, from P. Keg Seth, the South Sia Secretary of War, even though the official name of it is the Secretary of Defense, certainly acting more like the Department of War these days. That district court judge slammed them back and said they couldn't just remove everyone from the press room at the Pentagon if they didn't sign the statement. So now they're just going to ban all journalists from the Pentagon building. That is their, and that'll take a while probably to work its way through the courts. We'll see, unless this judge wants to quickly intervene again. That can happen. But this is a total constant contest and attention, Earl. And I do think civil liberties has to be understood in a broader social sense, because it's not a just society if people's rights can destroy your rights. And so there really does need to be a sense of a balance and the common good, right? It's why your neighbor has certain rights that they, if they live next door to you, into what they're doing privately. But if what they're doing in their yard starts to mess with your yard, right, then your rights come into play and there has to be some kind of balance. And so that is a lot of living in a liberal democracy, liberal as in believing in individual freedom and fundamental rights. You don't want a society where the majority can totally rules and individuals and minorities have no rights whatsoever, right? But you don't want one where it's just whoever's most powerful gets rights. There were rights before the U.S. Republic and the Constitution. The king had a lot of rights. Nobles had a lot of rights. Average people had none, right? In fact, the land wasn't even owned by people, and they were living as serfs, right? That was hundreds and hundreds of years of history. the rights of a slaveholder, to look at the early American Republic, obviously infringe on the rights of the people who were held in servitude.
Right.
So they have rights too, which means we can't have slavery, even though that reduced the rights of a group of people.
So Dr. Craig, at the root of it all is legalese, right? I mean, your freedoms and these rights are meted out in court, really. I mean, for us to think that we have all of these things and as American citizens automatically just isn't so, because as you just stated, we've got a, you know, White House that's telling the news outlets and picking and choosing who can come in to the Pentagon. We don't want you if you're going to ask the wrong questions, as if the media doesn't have any rights to speak on behalf of the citizenry. But that's on a larger scale. But we as ordinary, everyday citizens, and especially those of us who are on these airways and other things, are terrified to ask maybe the wrong question, because there'll be some punishment meted out either to the company that owns these outlets. How is this, you know, a good thing for what our nation stands for?
So the tension between your individual rights and the rights of the majority or rights of another individual or group, they are all meted out in court, right? Your neighbor and you may come to a conclusion, right, as to how it should go without bringing in anyone. Maybe you're older or the police have to come in, but you're still not going to court, right?
Right.
You're in a grocery store and someone arrives at the line quicker, a little faster than you, you yield, right? You're agreeing to their right to be ahead of you in line. Sometimes that doesn't happen and that becomes a conflict, right? You have people who, you know, like people who are driving illegally and cutting in front of everyone and endangering everyone on the highway. But you're right, there's a real danger that when there are major disputes, it goes to courts. And courts are, first of all, stacked in favor of those people who can afford more lawyers. And of course, the President of the United States, who has now made the Department of Justice the biggest law firm in the country, his own personal firm, means that it's incredible, even if he's totally wrong, it's an incredible punishment to take them on. The amount of cost, if you could even afford it, and how you could possibly pay for all the legal fees. And then you have judges that are all over the map on these rights. And one of the dangers to liberty that isn't talked about very much is when courts basically come to the conclusion that rights are formal on paper, but they don't have practical effect. And I'll give you an example. This happens all the time. You have formal conclusions that you have a theoretical right, and therefore your rights haven't been violated, but you have no way to actually engage in that right. So, for example, Plessy versus Ferguson,
right. The
infamous decision in 1896 by the U.S. Supreme Court that legalized segregation and said that you could have separation but had to be equal, right? Well, that was formal equality, supposedly in line with the 14th Amendment. In reality, the black schools and the black services were horrible and terribly underfunded compared to the white services. And the courts paid no mind to this because the legal principle was consistent that everyone's still equal, even if they're separate, which wasn't true. And so one of the ways that was overturned was really sharp lawyers like Charles Hamilton Houston, NAACP and Howard Law School, who argued that segregation and separateness was inherently unequal and therefore unconstitutional and therefore a violation of the 14th Amendment. So it takes a long time, though. That was on the books for 60 years, Earl. So, and by the way, then it took forever to try to enforce Brown v. Board. In fact, arguably, the schools are now more segregated than they were in the mid-1950s. Again, courts and judges standing on theoretical equality, but not making sure there is actual equality. So I think that's where the fight for civil rights exists. There's a bill, ACLU opposed it, your sponsor, Citizen Action Wisconsin opposes it, the a lot of a lot of the liberal Jewish groups and the liberal Arab and Muslim groups oppose it. Voces de la Frontera opposes it, which has a definition of anti-Semitism that they codify in state law and make it a and make it a criminal offense that in, that can be interpreted to include criticism of Israel, i.e., a clear violation of the First Amendment, giving prosecutors the ability to charge people just for their political views, protesting on behalf of or speaking on behalf of Palestinian rights in Gaza and the West Bank. And this is passed the legislature, and we don't know whether the governor is going to sign it or not. There was a good, if people want to look it up, there was a very good article Friday in the Wisconsin Examiner by Eric Gunn about it. And there's a sign-on letter, Citizen Action Wisconsin Work, and a whole lot of her groups that has been sent to the governor. But we don't know. So you have threats to rights, Earl, that are politically motivated, even among Democrats. It's not just about the Trump regime.
So, Dr. Craig, you mentioned the issue with universities and the fact that I remember as a young man the protest that took place during the Vietnam War. And you know, the universities used to be a place that it was kind of accepted that freedom of thought and expression was the place. And universities kind of agreed to that. And so there was kind of freedom to do those kind of things. Now they're challenging and kicking people out of the nation, out of the country, because they're doing what, Dr. Craig? They have a right to protest. You know, I don't understand how the fact that we had and supposedly have a right to protest and in the Constitution, and yet when people do that, they can be, well, you're anti-Semitic because you are protesting what is going on in Gaza. I mean, help me understand, Dr. Craig, how that's okay.
It's not, which is why but rights have to be enforced. In fact, rights require power. So if you don't have enough organized Democrat power to protect rights, they will go away. And we've seen, and you often see that not just with the infringement of rights, but the expansion of other people's rights, like the Citizens United decision that decided that money is speech, and therefore billionaires have a right to spend whatever they want. What that gives Elon Musk tremendous rights, some would argue rights to violate laws and try to attempt voter bribery. But it eliminates everyone else's right to have a responsive government. It's a government bought by the richest, the most powerful, and most connected. And if you look at public policy, it's reflected in our public policy. Our public policy is very responsive and helpful to the top 1% of the income bracket, and it's very unresponsive to the middle class and the working class, because we've allowed the rights of the many to be infringed by the rights of the powerful and wealthy few. And so it's a constant fight. It has to be reinvented all the time. It's just very important not to give any level of government the authority to make a decision that any kind of the free speech we need, like to actually have a vibrant discussion about Israel and Palestine and what is a just settlement. You shut that down and you're able to call one side as engaged in hate speech and you can prosecute them. Then all it takes is for Tom Tiffany to be elected governor and to try to enforce that law against his political enemies, which is what you're seeing with Donald Trump now, threatening media outlets, right? Threatening that he's going to pull their licenses if they don't start saying that his war is some great, brilliant war. And I don't know, all you have to do for a lot of this country is just to show the president babbling every day insensibly, where it's clear he doesn't know, he has no exit strategy, he has no idea what he's talking about, but he just keeps talking, doesn't he, Earl?
Yeah, but you know, Dr. Craig, that is at the root of what I'm talking about when I'm talking about civil liberties and our freedoms and those kinds of things, because those things right before our eyes, we're seeing those things not matter. And so I'll tell you, I really am more than frustrated. I'm really worried that we're digging this hole that we won't be able to get out of. Another prime example is people have a right to bear arms. So as individuals, you have a right to bear arms. I was having a conversation with a guy the other day, and he was telling me about, you know, his rights as a gun owner. He should be able to carry his gun wherever he wants to carry it. So those of us who don't own guns, Dr. Craig, and we're sitting in the restaurant, I don't want a guy coming into the restaurant with a gun because he says he feels unsafe. But all of us sitting in the restaurant, what about our rights? His right supersedes the majority's rights. I mean, there's so many different aspects of rights, and that's why I wanted to have this discussion with you, because I think the American people really don't understand the depths of what we're talking about when we're talking about these liberties.
Yeah, and that's a classic example of one person's rights damaging, infringing upon the rights of others, the right to life, which would be the most right. fundamental of all rights. And there's just a tension in that rights tend to be seen absolutely, right? But they can't yes. be absolute within a cooperative commonwealth or democracy. They have to be balanced. But it makes sense. I have this right. And when in saying that, in stating that, it's like you're the man in nature and there's no one else around you. I mean, but people are able to think that way. And I've got to say, these right-wing judges have distorted all reason and all language interpreting that Second Amendment to mean that you have an unfettered individual right to carry guns wherever you want. It simply does not say that. That is not the history of it as far as looking at when the Constitutional Convention was forced to ratify the Constitution to create a Bill of Rights. That's not the history of the thing. It makes you ignore the whole first part of it, which is a well-regulated militia. Didn't say you have a right to bear arms, period. It put it in the context of a well-regulated militia, right? Which was a primary method of self-defense. The militias are what fought the British originally in the Civil War before George Washington created an army. There's also a dark side in the militias. The militias in the South were slave patrols. And that was partly in there from the slaveocracy to try to make sure that they could they could continue to enforce slavery.
You know, Dr. Craig, human rights, we can talk about civil rights, we can talk about human rights. Human rights are what? A moral thought process as opposed to a legal process?
It's a great question. I do tend to think that our conception of rights comes out from outside of the law, but then the only way to enforce our differences, one of the major ways, is in the law. And so that's when the question is I think it requires judges actually to do a sorting and balancing and not to be legally formalistic where there's far too much of giving people theoretical rights that they're not actually given, right? And that Plessy versus Ferguson is only one example of that. You see a lot of that with this current Supreme Court, where it gives people rights they could never use. And I think that is completely vapid and undermines the whole point of civil liberties and liberalism generally. But obviously, if they function, legislatures, governors, presidents, congresses have a huge role as well, right, in establishing people's rights. And rights can go too far. One of the problems we have right now is it takes us forever to build most major projects, like high-speed rail. Right. It's been nearly impossible to build. That's not true in other democracies. It's not true in Asia. It's not true in Europe. And their per mile is like the trains, giving you an example, it's much cheaper. But we have so many different people who can assert rights and review a project over and over and over again, that that's an example of a nightmare where too many individual rights have been granted, and it harms the general interest, the public good. And so we have both problems. We both have a suppression of individual rights in some cases, but we also have individual rights that are trumping the common interest in a way. And we need to find a much better balance. That's one of the reasons people are so fed up with government, because the only things it seems to be able to get done, Earl, are things that the oligarchs are for. You want to build a lot of data centers and big tech and the big utilities are for it, then you can do that rapidly with very little oversight. In fact, the legislature has adjourned without putting any regulatory guardrails in on data centers, right? So that can happen. But if you want to build effective mass transit in Milwaukee, well, that's an impossible task. The country that did the Marshall Plan, that sent the man to the moon, now can't do the most basic things.
You know, Dr. Craig, the reason I kind of mention the human rights aspect of it is it plays out every day in this nation, because you hear people talk about people who are here illegally as if they have no rights whatsoever. They're aliens. Listen to the term. They're aliens. So it's like they're from a different planet. They're not human. They're separate from those of us who are American citizens here. And there are people who believe that those people have no rights whatsoever in this country. And this is why they're treated in a manner that they're treated, because people don't see them as humans equal to the American citizens. And so when we talk about rights and those kinds of things, those kinds of human rights in this nation don't supersede these other individual rights, do they?
No.
Go ahead.
This regime has not only taken that stance, it's decided that we're not bound to human rights in foreign policy.
Right.
The first American, there's been a lot of hypocrisy in the history of American foreign policy, but now we have an administration that's just saying outright, we can kill people, we can violate sovereignty, there are no rules, and we're only going to do things that are in our interest, which means the Trump's family's interest, because like a mobster, they want a taste, right, of everything. You got to go pay Jared Kushner over there, and then we can make this deal. But the idea that other human beings, that they're not human rights, which you were pointing out, Earl, not just American rights or rights of citizens, right? It has an ugly history. I mean, not only in many genocides and war crimes throughout history, but you can trace it back a lot further than this, but in the United States, you can trace it back to Dred Scott and Chief Justice Roger Taney's infamous statement that a black man has no rights that a white man is bound to respect. And the Trump regime is saying that a non-citizen has no rights that an American president is bound to respect. That is a horrendous precedent. Now, this country has done plenty of terrible things since we really became a kind of a hidden empire. But at least we, by saying that and committing ourselves to spreading democracy and human rights everywhere, that was some kind of a constraint. It was also going to be used against our foreign policy once you made such a statement. And Democrats and Republicans always did it throughout American history until this one. Now this one is sounding like Vladimir Putin.
You know, Dr. Craig, we've got to take a short break and hear from our great sponsor, American Civil Liberties Union. We'll be right back.
President Trump and Elon Musk are forcing radical changes in Washington, from stopping payments for health care and threatening to restrict abortion rights to accessing Americans' private information. With Washington out of control, who we elect to the Wisconsin Supreme Court could be the last line of defense of our rights. The ACLU Voter Education Fund does not endorse or oppose candidates, but wants you to cast an informed vote in the Wisconsin Supreme Court election. So where do the candidates land on issues like abortion?
Brad Schimmel stated he supports banning abortion. Susan Crawford successfully protected abortion rights while representing Planned Parenthood in Wisconsin. We need a Wisconsin Supreme Court that can be a check and balance to protect us when our rights are threatened at the federal level. On April 1st, Wisconsin voters will make a critical decision about the future of abortion in our state. To learn more about the Wisconsin Supreme Court candidates, visit aclu.org/WI2025. Paid for by ACLU Voter Education Fund, 212-549-2500. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's agent or committee.
ACLU Voter Education Fund is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Talk to me, so you can see what's going on.
All right, welcome back to What's Going On with Earl Ingram. My guest is Dr. Robert Craig of Citizen Action. He's public policy and community organizing with Citizen Action of Wisconsin. He's also appeared on, you know, almost all the news outlets from Fox News, MSNBC, Al Jazeera, and many others. And he's an accomplished author as well, in demand all over this nation. And it's just great to have him.
I guess I'm qualified because Sean Hattie has yelled at me a couple times.
I know. you know, Dr. Craig, and we are so fortunate here at Civic Media to be able to have you on. I am always just so grateful and thankful that I'm a minnow in the ocean, and you choose to give some time to us. I really do appreciate it. You kind of help point out things, Dr. Craig, that the average person doesn't get a chance to understand, and it's why I'm so grateful to have you as, I'd like to say, a friend, but also to be a part of your great organization, and then to have you on these airways.
Of course, we're all minnows, right? Because yeah. We live in a huge social organism, the size of humanity. I mean, as messed up as things are, it is amazing what a complex society humans have created.
So, Dr. Craig, let me ask you, as you know, this whole reality of our nation and the changing of it. Our nation is going through an internal change that maybe, Dr. Craig, it happens every 50 years or whatever it is. But isn't it safe to say we are going through a transitional period in our nation's history with what we're dealing with right now? And so after we're gone, baby boomers, our generation is gone, the millennials and others are really going to be faced with some difficult issues if we don't try to straighten them out in the time we have left? Is it too presumptuous of me to think that the younger generation won't be able to fight those fights and deal with those issues themselves?
No, I think the current generation that's in charge is leaving probably the hardest problem any generation has left for another, and is making it worse. So anything we can do right now, this is like a turning point of turning points in human history, not just American history.
Right.
And so not only do you have this whole great revolution towards democratic government and civil liberties, right? And countries where people have rights and there's some level of group decision making, not totalitarian or authoritarian systems. It's very much at risk, where the world's oldest large scale democracy is in a state of regression and has a party and a leader that wants to end American democracy, to go to something else. What political scientists call electoral autocracy. You still have elections, but only one side can win, which is the way the Wisconsin legislature was for 14 years. We've experienced it in Wisconsin. You gerrymander the legislature enough, it's not really a Democratic small-d legislature, because only one party can win. The House always wins. That is not the design of a democracy. But you also have this climate crisis going on right now, where you can't reverse the carbon being put in the atmosphere. So it makes it worse and worse and worse. We're seeing, and there's a lot of reports, New York Times has a report this week, Earl, that the feedback mechanisms where, you know, the oceans start spewing warmth right. into the atmosphere, ice, rainforests, et cetera, the feedback loops are much worse than expected. This is looking more like a worst case scenario. It means we have to not just meet the standards we're not meeting of greenhouse gas emission reductions, we have to accelerate them. And instead we have an administration that's saying fossil fuels are great. He's paying $1 billion, it came out this week, Earl, to pay a wind farm company not to build massive wind farms in the ocean that were going to power a lot of New England and North Carolina. We're paying $1 billion of our money not to get clean renewable energy that does not come through the Straits of Hormuz. And so perhaps this, you know, shall we say, self-inflicted wound of the preemptive attack on Iran and then the completely predictable scenario that they would be able to close down the Straits of Hormuz will remind people that there's a lot of other reasons other than runaway global warming, which threatens civilization. There's also just an economic security and a cost reason that we should be rapidly moving away from fossil fuels rather than doing the opposite. But these are all huge problems that we need to address now. Like if there's a change in power, if we can have fair elections in 26 and 28, which is going to be a fight, it's going to require a lot of people to get involved to make that happen. Then we've got to have a leadership, a president in the Congress in 2029, they're willing to get to work on all of these problems and do it quickly, not just be better because they're not Trump, right? That cannot be the brand of the Democratic Party, that we're better than the other guys, as bad as we are.
You know, Dr. Craig, that's why the American for Civil Liberties Union, Citizen Action, and other groups and organizations, grassroots organization, everyday people, if enough people stand up, you can defeat the people who are right now the power brokers, but it's going to require, you know, throngs and throngs of citizens. You talked about, you know, what's happening, Dr. Craig, where people are looking at Donald Trump trying to turn back the clock on fossil fuels. All of the battles that have been taking place over the last 25 years or so to address these oncoming issues that we know jeopardize the future of generations of yet born people in this world. You know, they're not here yet. If we allow things to continue down the path that they're going right now, they're going to be dealing with a whole, poisonous food, the water poison, the air poison, not just in certain areas, Dr. Craig, but all over the world. Listen, they're blowing up oil fields in the Mideast. And they continue to blow those things up. And it doesn't matter that they're poisoning the air and the water for decades to come. And all of those people, Dr. Craig, that are dying and the ones yet born that will be dying, none of those things seem to matter. So it's incumbent upon the average American citizen to get engaged, to get involved. Is it safe to say that?
Well, yeah, we're spending $1 billion a day in addition to the carnage that you're absolutely right to call out. The Pentagon just asked for $200 billion more dollars. That's a fifth of all the savings over 10 years from their massive cuts to healthcare, to Medicaid. I mean, we can't afford it because we're having optional, you know, misguided wars because we have an egotist in charge, right? A narcissist who thinks he can do no wrong and got a taste of power because Venezuela was easy, therefore Iran was going to be easy, which was an absurd proposition. I mean, this is an era of tremendous consequences right now. and it requires a massive mobilization, both to defend democracy and civil liberties, but then to create a government in the common interest that actually starts to work on our major problems. It's a two-step problem that we have. And so it was interesting when Tulsi Gabbard, the supposed head of intelligence for the Trump administration, no irony there, Earl.
No.
Angus King, this independent senator from Maine, actually asked her a question about climate change and national security and said, the estimates are that with warming at its current pace, that people from the equator, the equatorial zones, 200 million to a billion are going to be forced to migrate north. And are you considering that, Ms. Gabbard, as some major, a major national security issue that we should be planning for and addressing? And of course, you got a complete, shall we say, mess of an answer that didn't answer it at all. And I'm not sure she'd ever heard that before. But we're not even looking at what the biggest threats are. And that's something we have under control. If we're going to cause a billion people to live in places that are no longer inhabitable, then that's going to be a big issue. And Wisconsin's going to face it. You know, Phoenix is going to, and Arizona become uninhabitable. Those folks in the Southwest are going to be heading north.
You know, Dr. Craig, you're also a political historian. And so you've studied the history of our nation as well as the history of the world and other things. If you could, you know, look into the future and look at where we are now in the transition taking place in our nation, historians will mark this time, right? Because this is that big a deal with what we're faced with and what we're dealing with right now. I mean, just as you mentioned before, some people who determine that we're no longer going to consider ourselves the Department of Defense, we're going to become the Department of War. And just a change in that verbiage, you can see now why they wanted to change it from the Department of Defense to the Department of War, because we're going on the offensive. We are telling Cuba, we're sitting down with Cuba right now and telling them, listen, if you don't let us do this, if we can't do this, we're going to do this to you. That's the United States of America, Dr. Craig. Even if we did some of those things in the past, we didn't do them outwardly. We tried to cover those things up. But we are now outwardly telling the world we're going to be the aggressors. We don't care what the rest of you say. You're going to bow down to America. This is a historical change and transition that's taking place right now. Is it safe to say that?
Yes, absolutely. And I have to run after this, but I'll close on this, Earl. And that is, during the height of the Cold War, the 1950s and 1960s, we believe that if we were hypocrites and we didn't pursue human rights in the United States and have equality, that it would actually harm us, that we would be less appealing than communism, right, than the communist bloc. So that was one of the motivations for Brown versus Board of Education, Voting Rights Act, Civil Rights Act. It now seems to be quite the opposite, where we just baldly not only violate rights in this country, that is this regime, but just declare that we're just going to tear up sovereignty and just invade and take anything we want. We're just going to pillage the world. That makes us weaker, that we actually tried to in some way and said we were trying to advance liberty and democracy and human rights. That gave us soft power. Now it has to be all hard power. And you see how expensive it is, because we built the most expensive military in the history of the world, and it's damn expensive to use. It turns out the $1.5 trillion is if you don't use it. And if you use it, then it's even more expensive. It's not, it's like you got this really expensive lawnmower and it costs another double if you even use the thing, right? You just leave it in your garage and admire it, right?
Yes.
But if you use $2 million interceptors to shoot down $1,000 drones, that is not going to work out for us fiscally.
Hey, Dr. Craig, it's always great. Thank you as always. Really do appreciate you. And we'll see you in a week.
Thank you very much, Earl. It's always a pleasure.
Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action, and to our great sponsor, American Civil Liberties Union. That's a wrap for What's Going On with Earl Ingram. See you next time.
Talk to me, sister, so you can see, sister.